Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, you're listening to Luke's English Podcast. How are you? I hope that you're feeling a little bit better than me today, because you might be able to tell from the sound of my voice that I am suffering from a bit of a cold today. That's right, I'm a bit under the weather. I'm slightly off colour. But it's nothing to worry about. It's nothing too serious. It's just a normal, run-of-the-mill, bog-standard winter cold. I've got a bit of a blocked-up, slightly runny nose, slightly sore throat, a bit of a cough, slight headache, just the usual symptoms. Don't worry. I know that you are worrying about me, of course, because you care about me so much. You're probably thinking, Luke, why don't you just go to bed or just lie down on the sofa and just sort of rest and make sure you get better. Well, don't worry, folks, because I've decided that in recording this episode, I'm not going to push myself too harsh. I'm not going to push myself too hard. I'm going to take it fairly easy, okay? I'm looking after myself. And I also would say, don't worry, because I have just drunk a nice cup of Lemsip, which is my preferred cold and flu remedy. Lemsip is a kind of medicine, and it's in the form of a kind of powder which comes in these paper sachets, and you rip open the sachet and you pour it into a mug, and you pour hot water onto it, and the powder sort of dissolves into the hot water, and it creates this nice warm drink. And it contains paracetamol, and it contains decongestant. Paracetamol, of course, is a painkiller, it also helps to reduce fever that you might have if you've got a bit of a temperature. And the decongestant is what helps to try and relieve the congestion that you get in your nose. You can hear it there. I've got a bit of congestion as I do this episode. So I've had my Lemsip, and that's already starting to make me feel a bit better. So I'm nice and warm. I've also got several layers of warm clothing on. I'm wearing two nice thick woolen sweaters, and I've got a scarf around my neck, and I've got the heating on. The heating is on full blast, so I'm quite warm, I'm quite cozy, and I'm perfectly relaxed, and I'm not putting myself under any pressure in this episode. In fact, this episode, as you've probably noticed from the title, is all about Star Wars. That's right, Star Wars, finally. I'm talking about Star Wars in some detail in an episode of Luke's English Podcast. You must know, if you've been listening to the podcast for, you know, any length of time, you must know that I'm a huge fan of the Star Wars films. In fact, I was born in 1977, the same year as Star Wars. My name is Luke, and as far as I'm concerned, that makes me a Jedi, okay? I'm a Jedi Knight. I know that there may be more qualifications necessary to become a genuine Jedi, but if you need to be convinced, well, I was born on a Thursday, and I live in France now, and the French word for Thursday is spelled a little bit like the word Jedi, isn't it, when you think about it? So that's it. Basically, I'm a Jedi Knight. If it's possible to be a Jedi, I am one, okay? So as a Jedi Knight, and maybe even a Jedi Master, I think probably just a Jedi Knight. I'm certainly growing a beard, you know, the Obi-Wan Kenobi style beard that he has in Star Wars Episode 4. So I'm in Jedi mode. I'm just a Jedi with a cold, okay? And that's still a Jedi. I wonder if Jedis get colds, actually. Do Jedis catch colds? I imagine they use the Force to sort of help to boost their immune system. I suppose that's what they would do. They probably don't have, they don't need to take paracetamol and things like that. They just meditate. And that's all they need, isn't it? Okay, I'm not a Jedi Master, I'm just a Jedi Knight. Yes, there are two levels of Jedi. No, three levels of Jedi. You've got the Padawan Learner, okay? That's a sort of apprentice Jedi. Then you've got the Jedi Knight, who is, you know, someone who's qualified. They've gone through all the training processes. They've taken the exams and they've qualified as a Jedi. And then you've got the Jedi Master, who is sort of like, you know, the professor level Jedi, like Yoda, for example, and Obi-Wan Kenobi at the end of the first three films. Now, I know what you, some of you might be thinking. Well, I think there's probably, well, I wonder, probably two or three potential reactions that you are having right now as you listen to this. One of them could be, oh, brilliant, I'm a big fan of Star Wars. I'm on the same wavelength as Luke. I know that he loves Star Wars, so do I. And I'm really glad that he's talking about it, because this means that I'm getting two of the things that I really like. We've got an episode of Luke's English Podcast and we've got Star Wars at the same time. This is brilliant. I can't wait. I'm going to strap myself into my chair and I'm just going to sit here and listen to this. So that may be one reaction, the Star Wars fan reaction. The other reaction could be, oh God, Star Wars. Really, Luke? Really? Star Wars? All that stupid stuff of like little teddy bears running around in space and all that nonsense. Really? So some of you might not like Star Wars, which of course is perfectly reasonable response and a perfectly reasonable opinion to hold. The third option is probably somewhere in the middle, where you're like, well, I'm not a huge fan of Star Wars. I thought it was all right, but I'm quite prepared to listen to you talking about it, because maybe you can sort of shed some new light on the subject or something like that. And go ahead, Luke, go ahead. We want to know what you think about Star Wars. So, okay, if you're in the second category and you're not really a Star Wars fan, you might think, you might kind of be of the opinion that, you know, you don't really get it. Maybe you've never even seen the film, okay, or any of the films. You might not have seen any of the films, in which case, you know, it's probably difficult for you to have an opinion on the subject. If you've never seen any of the films, then I must say at the beginning, right here and now, spoiler alert, I will be giving away some details of the storyline to the Star Wars films. And I'm talking about the original trilogy, that's 4, 5 and 6, and the prequel trilogy, which is episode 1, 2 and 3. 4, 5 and 6 were released, well, 4 was released in 1977, 5 was released in 1980, I believe. Or 1979, and 6 was released in 1983. So 4, 5, 6 is the original trilogy. 1, 2, 3 are the more updated versions, the ones that were released sort of, you know, 10 years ago or so, something like that. 1999, I think, was episode 1. And those, although they were released more recently, actually were set before the original trilogy. It's a bit confusing, isn't it? Yes, it is. So, maybe you've never seen any of them, in which case, be careful, because I will be giving away some plot details, some spoilers of the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy too. You may also have only ever seen the prequel trilogy, which I think is quite possible. The you know, the big flashy, big budget, computer generated image laden prequel films have, you know, fairly recently been in the cinema. I think the last episode 3 was in the cinemas in like 2005 or something like that, wasn't it? So that's fairly recent, and they're all available on DVD and they're shown on the TV and stuff like that. So maybe you've only seen the prequels, which is a terrible thing really, because for me the prequels are kind of a load of old rubbish compared to the originals. And many people say that the sort of prequel trilogy sort of destroyed their childhood and didn't really do justice to the original films and all that kind of thing. So I understand if you're not a fan of Star Wars. I hope that you hold on. I hope you keep listening. Maybe by listening to this, you can get some idea of why people are so obsessed with these films and what the appeal is. I'm not going to try and convince you that Star Wars is the best film franchise ever, because I think that, if you know, everyone is entitled to their opinion and it's very subjective. And if you, I think you probably have genuine reasons for thinking the Star Wars films are no good. You know, like the scripts are not very good. There's not necessarily much emotion in there. Not many sympathetic female characters, and various criticisms of the films. Lots of criticisms, especially of the prequels. But nevertheless, they are probably Star Wars is probably the biggest film franchise out there. And this is very timely. I've been meaning to talk about Star Wars properly on the podcast for some time. And really the thing that's sort of kickstarted me here, the thing that really inspired me to talk about Star Wars today, even when I'm feeling a bit sick, is the fact that the Episode 7 trailer, the first teaser trailer, appeared on the internet just a few days ago. That's the Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, official teaser trailer number one, directed by J.J. Abrams. It appeared online on the 28th of November, and as I record this, it's the 2nd of December. So 4 or 5 days ago, the trailer appeared. It's already on about 40 million views at this point. And, you know, the internet is buzzing regarding the new release of the Star Wars films. So that's right, we're getting a whole new trilogy of Star Wars films. We're going to get 7, 8 and 9. And Episode 7 arrives in December 2015. So the buzz has started. Suddenly people are talking about Star Wars again. So be prepared, because for the next year, probably for the next 12 months, you're going to get lots of Star Wars coverage in the media. Star Wars is going to be everywhere as the hype builds up, and as the marketing machine goes into overdrive. You're going to get Star Wars posters and Star Wars TV commercials. There'll probably be merchandising and things like that. That's a little bit disappointing. I'm a little bit tired of all the merchandising. I think that's one of the things that the prequel trilogy did wrong. There was too much hype, too much advertising, too many products being released before the films actually came out, and so much hype that in the end it was a big anticlimax. I hope that they don't do that so much this time, and they focus instead on just producing an entertaining film. But I'm sure that the studios and the companies will not be able to help themselves. They'll all be cashing in on the hype and the buzz generated by the new release of these Star Wars films. So the new trailer appeared on the internet. Naturally, I've seen it. I managed to catch it very early because I'd heard that it was going to be released on YouTube, and I was constantly searching every day, where's the new Star Wars trailer? And I found it, and I've seen it, and I have to admit that I'm very excited about this. I know that I'm a bit of a geek, especially when it comes to Star Wars. I'm not a full geek, you know. I don't get overexcited about many of these things, but Star Wars is something that means a lot to me personally. My nose is getting more and more blocked up, isn't it, as this episode progresses. I may need to pause the podcast at some point and go and blow my nose. I would blow my nose on the podcast, but I think that might be a little bit too much, especially as in some cultures I realise that blowing your nose in public is considered to be quite rude. So what's going to happen in this episode? Well, one of the things is that I may blow my nose on the podcast, despite the potential for offending some of you out there in the world. But, you know, I like to be a bit controversial sometimes. So who knows, I might blow my nose on the episode. That'll be a first. Is that will that be the first time I've ever done that? I don't know. I can't keep track anymore. There are so many episodes behind me now. I don't know what I've done already. I know that I've drunk tea on the podcast many times. I nearly died on a podcast once, several times perhaps. Certainly once, because I was drinking tea and I choked on the tea. Do you remember that? And I couldn't breathe for a few seconds. That was a scary moment. Other times when I was under threat was when I was driving a car around Paris. That was a slightly risky move, wasn't it? That was an adrenaline high. It really was. I was sweating and, you know, trying not to crash into people. But I'm in a nice safe place here in my little room where I record the podcast, which recently I've started calling the Space Pod, or maybe the Sky Pod. This is the place where I record episodes of the podcast. Space Pod or Sky Pod. So I'm... Oh, God, you hear that? You hear my nose there? So I'm in a nice, comfortable, safe place here in the Sky Pod. What's going to happen in this episode? I may blow my nose soon. We're going to talk a little bit about the trailer for the new Star Wars film, which is coming out in December. And I think I'm going to play the trailer to you, the audio of it, anyway. And then I'm just going to basically ramble on about Star Wars, touching on the history of the film franchise. I'm going to talk about the appeal of the films. So why do people like Star Wars so much? Why do I personally like Star Wars so much? I think also I'm going to go through, in that section about the history, I think I'm going to go through each film and explain some of the details of the stories and some other facts. Basically, I want to try and tell you everything I know about Star Wars. I'm going to try and contain this. I'm going to try and contain myself. Try not to get too excited. And I will try and keep this within the sort of 60-minute mark. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen. If I end up, you know, if I get on a roll, I might end up talking for more than an hour. This is just the introduction, and we've already done 15 minutes. It's incredible. So that's an idea of what you're going to get in this episode. Star Wars fans, yes, I hope you're excited as well. Non-Star Wars fans, well, I hope that you stick with it and do listen. And maybe I can change your mind and make you reconsider the whole thing. Okay, right, I'm now going to go and get a tissue. No, wait a minute, I've got a tissue here. Oh, brilliant. Okay, I've got like a little pack of tissues. Okay, I'm going to be controversial here. Sorry for listeners in Japan for whom this might be a rude thing, but I'm going to blow my nose now. I'm not going to do it right in front of the microphone. I'm going to move away from the microphone, but you will be able to hear me. Okay, so here we go. Luke Thompson from Luke's English Podcast blowing his nose. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Ah, oh, God, that's better. Ah, oh, okay. I don't know if you're like me, but whenever I've blown my nose, I do have a little look afterwards. Have a little check to see what I've produced. Oh, not bad. Quite good. There is, I have to admit, there's, maybe it's just me, but there is something quite satisfying about producing a good healthy amount of stuff out of your nose into a tissue. It's like kind of like a, I feel almost quite proud. It's like if I produce a lot, it's like, oh, good one, good job. And if not very much comes out, then I feel a bit disappointed. Like, is that the best my nose could do? I don't know if you're like me. Maybe it's just me. Or maybe it's human nature and everyone does it. I don't know, really. I just don't know. All right, then. So the Star Wars franchise. Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars. Okay, you know what? Since this is, you know, the buzz has started around the new Star Wars films, let's have a little listen to the trailer. The teaser trailer. So we're just going to listen to it. It's only about a minute long, a minute and a half. So let's listen to it. You can get some audio idea of what the trailer is all about. And then I'll talk about that a little bit before moving on to talk about the rest of the Star Wars universe. Here we go. So the trailer starts with a green screen. The following preview has been approved, etc. And it opens with shots of the desert on Tatooine, which is one of the main places in Star Wars. Right, wait a minute. I need to rewind that because I interrupted it. Okay.
There has been an awakening. Have you felt it?
I have to say, some of those sound effects do get me quite excited. I mean, it's the noises, it's the sound effects, and some of the images that we see there that kind of bring out a lot of the kind of nostalgia that I have for my childhood. Let's have a look at the trailer again. I'm going to drop the volume a little bit. So the trailer begins with the desert on Tatooine, which is one of the planets where certainly the first Star Wars film, a lot of the scenes were set there. Luke Skywalker comes from Tatooine. We hear someone say there's been an awakening. Who is that? Like,
felt it.
Some kind of like Darth Vader character. Then we see a guy A guy appears on the screen. He's in a Stormtrooper's outfit. Stormtroopers are those guys in those white suits. They are like the soldiers of the Empire. It's a guy in a Stormtrooper outfit, and he doesn't have the helmet on, so we can see his face, and he's clearly in a lot of distress. He seems to be running away from someone. Maybe he's being chased. And we also hear a little sound in the background that goes, I don't know if you can hear that. Did you hear it? Okay, now I've been listening to it in some detail. That, is for me, is the sound of an Imperial probe droid. An Imperial probe droid is like a sort of sentry, like a drone sent down by like an Imperial spaceship. And they're used to, like, you know, search for rebels and things like that. Okay, so maybe he's running away from the Empire. But it's strange that he's dressed as a stormtrooper. So either he's a stormtrooper that has crash-landed on the planet or something, or he's a rebel who is trying to run away from the Empire, and he's disguised himself as a stormtrooper. The guy who plays the guy that we see, he's actually a British actor. What's his name? I'm just trying to find his name here. I can't see his name. It's there somewhere. Okay, I don't know his name. Anyway, he's a British actor, and he was in a really great British film called Attack the Block, which was directed by Joe Cornish from Adam and Joe. I told you about Adam and Joe before. They did that great podcast. Adam and Joe, well, Joe Cornish went on to direct a film called Attack the Block, which is set in South London, and it's a sort of science fiction kind of horror thing about some aliens which attack a tower block, and the kids who live in the tower block have to defend their home against these aliens. And the main character is played by the same guy who appears in this trailer. So I'm quite pleased that we've got a British guy, I think he's from Brixton, in this huge international blockbuster. So I'm very pleased about that. One thing that I find a little bit a bit disappointing is that in the comments section, not only on this page but on other pages where people are talking about the trailer, a lot of people have been sort of commenting on the fact that he's black, and people are saying, "Oh, he's black. You know, how can you have a black stormtrooper?" Which, frankly, I think is a bit racist. Why can't you have a black stormtrooper? Why not? You know, it's like the first thing that people notice. Oh, he's a black guy. Like, really? Really? I think it's actually great that the first character we see, and possibly the main character in the film, is a black guy. I think that's a fantastic advance. And if you think otherwise, then I'm sorry, it's just basic racism. Now, there are plenty of reasons why you could have a black stormtrooper. Some people say that the stormtroopers, as we see in the prequel trilogy, are actually clones. They're all clones of a guy called Jango Fett, who is Boba Fett's dad. They were all clones. And therefore, the stormtroopers are also clones as well. And the clones weren't black. All right. Well, okay. And I'm really geeking out on you now. It could be that, first of all, the new stormtroopers are not clones anymore. They're just enlisted guys from the universe. They could be different, you know, different races, different colours, different sizes and everything. In fact, there is a moment in the trailer where we see a bunch of stormtroopers arriving on some planet, and they're clearly different heights. You know, you've got some are taller than others. So I think they're not clones anymore. So that could mean they could be black, they could be white, they could be brown, pink, blue, purple, yellow, whatever. And the other idea is that maybe he's not a stormtrooper. Maybe he's a rebel who's disguised himself as a stormtrooper. And there you go, that explains that. But I do find it a bit disappointing that so many people have been commenting on this sort of this thing. Anyway, let's carry on. So he appears on screen.
It has been an awakening.
He's sweaty, he's running away from someone. And then we get to... There he is. Okay, and then we see like this like droid rolling across the screen, and it's it looks like R2-D2, but it's like a ball with a droid head on the top. It's like R2-D2, but his body is a ball, and he's making sort of like, you know, R2-D2 noises. I'm not completely convinced by the ball droid thing. That's a bit I don't know, I'm not completely convinced by that. Like a ball droid? It looks quite cute and quite funny, though. So that's quite nice. Then we see the stormtroopers arriving, and they're all tooled up. They've got their weapons and stuff, and it looks like they're ready to attack a planet or do an invasion or something like that. And the stormtrooper masks look a little bit different. They look cool. They're a bit similar to the clone troopers that we saw in the original trilogy. Not the original trilogy, the prequel trilogy. And so on. Are you still listening to this? Are you still engaged by this? Maybe I should skip through the trailer and just head straight onto to my ramble about the original Star Wars stuff. Basically, I'm pretty excited about the trailer. You can find it embedded on the page for this episode. All right, then. Let's have a little talk about the history of Star Wars. Okay, so the original Star Wars, the first one, which is actually episode 4, strangely enough. It's a bit confusing, isn't it? The first one is episode 4. So it goes 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 7, 8, 9, which is a really bizarre way of doing it, but that's the way that it's been done. So the first one, episode 4, obviously was written and directed by George Lucas. It was released in 1977. George Lucas comes from a generation of really great movie directors, and he's part of a sort of group of directors that includes Steven Spielberg, Francis Ford Coppola, and George Lucas. They were friends. They studied film together, I believe. Obviously, Coppola went on to make great films like The Godfather trilogy and Apocalypse Now. Steven Spielberg, you know, he did so many amazing things during the 70s, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and then, of course, later on he did E.T., and then even more sort of critically acclaimed work like Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan, now considered to be perhaps the greatest director that there is at the moment. Lucas and Spielberg did work together, of course, on Indiana Jones. Spielberg directed it. Lucas wrote the story. Really, Star Wars was Lucas's big, big success. He had made several other films before he did Star Wars, which show that he is actually a very good filmmaker. He did a film called American Graffiti, which is about sort of young kids growing up in some town in America, and the kind of rock and roll generation. They're listening to rock and roll music on the radio. It's like kids who don't quite know where their future is going, a sense of uncertainty about the future and how they fit into adult life, you know, that kind of coming of age story. Cars are quite a big feature in that film, and there are several sequences of car races, which does sort of remind you of some of the action sequences from the Star Wars films. He also did a kind of slightly more, what's the word for it, kind of experimental film, which I think is called THX-1388, which I haven't even seen, but it's a science fiction film which is a sort of, I think it's set in a sort of dystopian world, a kind of 1984 kind of situation. And in that film, although it's not really sort of blockbuster Hollywood stuff, it's more of an experimental film, you do see some tonal elements that come back in the Star Wars movies. For example, some of the sound effects and the visual elements and the general tone of things like the Empire and the robots and things that you see in the Star Wars movies. When Lucas came up with the idea of Star Wars, I think it was really sort of related to the kind of swashbuckling epic adventure stories that he'd read or seen on TV as a kid. Things like Flash Gordon, stuff like that, like big space adventures, battling with aliens and things like that. Now, Stanley Kubrick in the 1960s had released 2001, A Space Odyssey, which, of course, was like Hollywood's big introduction to space, really. And there was also Star Trek as well, the Star Trek TV show. But really, Star Wars is what introduced space to Hollywood in a different kind of way. 2001 and Star Trek had both been a slightly sort of scientific based approach to space. And it involved humans from Earth and the way that we interact with space, and it's sort of about our relationship with space and what it really means to be a human being, the relationship between human being and the epicness of space, and all those scientific questions and philosophical and ethical questions that are raised by progress into space. Okay, so those films are really about us, they're about people, about humans and our human condition. But Star Wars really is nothing to do with humans. It's more of a sort of mythical story. It doesn't take place on Earth. In fact, of course, it takes place a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. In fact, those are the words that appear on the screen right at the beginning of the film. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. So just suggesting that this is total fantasy, really. And what it did, though, is it used space as a backdrop for kind of a mythical adventure story with a battle of good against evil. It's like a fairy story, really, or like an old myth, you know, like the myths and legends of a young person who discovers that they have a sort of destiny, that they're the chosen one, that they have to learn develop their powers and then defeat an evil character. That kind of story is really a typical story. It's a trope, and you see it in lots and lots of other films, like, for example, the Harry Potter series, even the Lord of the Rings with Bilbo, or Frodo's journey from being, his simple life as a young hobbit in Hobbiton through all the adventures and the big part that he has to play in the grand battle against evil. Star Wars is really that kind of story. It's a very typical mythical kind of story. Also, it was like the first real big, one of the first big blockbuster movies. One of those films that was an event in itself. I mean, maybe you had Jaws, perhaps The Exorcist as well. But Star Wars is the sort of film that became a huge cultural event. As a movie, it's something that everybody saw. Everyone was talking about it. It launched lots of merchandising as well. There were obviously the toys associated with the Star Wars films. As a kid, I had my Star Wars figures, all my little toys for each character in the Star Wars universe. I had toys for different spaceships and things from the Star Wars universe. I used to have, my brother and I had loads of Star Wars figures, and we also had, I had an X-Wing fighter, a plastic X-Wing fighter. You pressed a button on the top and its wings would open, and there was a space where you could put a little Luke Skywalker character in the front of it, and then you could imagine you were playing around with an X-Wing fighter. What else did we have? I had an AT-AT walker from Return of the Jedi, one of those robot sort of things that walks through the jungle on Endor. I had one of those too, and they were some of my favourite toys. So Star Wars really is one of those, the first movie franchises that was more than just a movie. It was a big cultural event, and it was also it also launched a wide range of merchandising as well. These days, that's just standard, isn't it? I mean, that happens with all the big movie releases. You not only get the film, you also get all sorts of other products that relate to it too. Now, good or bad, whether you think that's a good or bad thing, certainly Star Wars was groundbreaking in that sense too. But if we look at just the films and the effect of actually sitting in the cinema and watching the films, it was quite an explosive moment in cinema history. Of course, right at the beginning of Star Wars Episode 4, you have that iconic opening sequence with the big Star Wars sign, and then the story, which sort of scrolls away from the viewer through space. These big yellow letters through space that give you the sort of background story that explain the situation. And then you're just launched into this epic kind of space adventure. And the opening shot is really iconic. You see, this spaceship flying over the camera, and then it's followed by a huge Star Destroyer, which seems to go on forever and ever and ever, and you get these dramatic special effects and sound effects. It was like, 2000, what Stanley Kubrick had achieved with special effects in 2001, but which was a very sort of cerebral, fairly slow-paced, well-considered version of space. This was space as an epic battleground. It was an extremely thrilling moment, I think, for most of the people who saw it. And it still is, even today, when I watch the opening of Star Wars and you see the Star Destroyer coming over the camera, its big threatening presence and the sound of the lasers. It's an incredible moment, and most of the viewers, certainly the viewers who liked the film, were just locked in to it from that moment onwards. Let's see. I think when it was first made, George Lucas didn't think it would be a success. In fact, no one really thought it would be a success. George found the filming to be extremely stressful, and they were all very worried. They thought it was that no one was going to really buy it, you know, that they wouldn't be convinced by this kind of weird space adventure with all these odd characters. Of course, it had never been done before, really. So it was a huge surprise for almost everyone when it became a massive hit in the cinemas. And it still remains to this day, you know, just a huge event. I'm not sure, actually, at this point, which is the highest grossing film of all time. I think it might be Avatar or maybe Titanic, but certainly the Star Wars films are up there. And for a long time, Star Wars, I think, was the most successful movie series of all time. Let's see. So, of course, episode four, the basic story is that we find Luke Skywalker. He kind of unwittingly picks up a couple of droids, one of whom, R2-D2, contains plans which can be used to destroy the Death Star, this space station, which is used by the Galactic Empire as a huge weapon, which they use basically to dominate the universe. So Luke Skywalker, without realizing it, gets dragged into this epic space conflict, and he ends up being made a member of the rebellion against the Empire. So we don't realize it at the beginning, but he is kind of a crucial part, not only of this big political conflict which is going on in the universe, but also in a much larger, more significant narrative, which is that of the Force and the mystery of the Force and the good and the dark sides. And there seems to be some kind of epic spiritual element to this story, which is the idea that there is maybe a prophecy, just like in many old myths, there's some kind of prophecy or a story which has already been written, like a predetermined story that's written by the gods or something like that, which goes back to that idea of the Greek mythology and so on. Luke doesn't realize it at the beginning, and neither do we, that he's a very key player in the battle of basically good against evil. We also don't realize that he is, you know, connected in various ways to other key characters in the story. And as we go through the narrative, things become more and more clear, and things become more and more important and significant as we go on. And this young farmer from Tatooine ends up being perhaps, you know, one of the most important people in the universe. I mean, there are other characters, you know, Harrison Ford, of course, playing Han Solo, and Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia and the droids, and Darth Vader, this incredibly imposing character who is actually played by something like six different actors. You've got the original, the guy who wears the suit, this British bodybuilder. I think his name's Dave Prowse, this large guy, you know, huge, very tall, very well-built bloke who thought that he was going to be the voice of Darth Vader as well. But in fact, in post-production, they added on the much more impressive, much more commanding voice of James Earl Jones, the American actor who's got that kind of very deep, very imposing voice, which of course was a great move, adding his voice over the top. Dave Prowse must have been gutted, of course, to discover that he in fact wasn't voicing Darth Vader, he was just doing the body movements. It does create a slightly strange atmosphere around Darth Vader, that the voice and the body are not completely synchronized. There's a weird atmosphere around him. So there was Dave Prowse, James Earl Jones. We've also had the little boy who plays the young Anakin Skywalker in the first film, and then Hayden Christensen as well, who plays the, you know, the more grown up version of Anakin Skywalker, who eventually becomes Darth Vader in the prequel movies. And then, of course, there's another actor, the actor who plays the face of Darth Vader after Luke Skywalker has removed his helmet at the end of episode 6. So I think that's five actors. There may be even more. As far as I know, it's just five people who've actually portrayed Darth Vader in various ways over the years. Obi-Wan Kenobi, played by Sir Alec Guinness, a fantastic, a brilliant British actor, a classical British actor, who for some reason ended up in this bizarre modern science fiction story. But thank goodness he did, because Alec Guinness is brilliant as Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's such an understated performer, but he brings a real level of gravity and quality and class to the film. And I think that Ben Kenobi, or Obi-Wan Kenobi, is such an important character for creating a sort of believability. He's brilliant in the film, and apparently on set he was the consummate professional. But I think that although this is maybe his best known work, it's certainly not the best acting that he ever did, or even the best project that he was part of. And I think that Alec Guinness was quite embarrassed, really, about his involvement with Star Wars. I believe that he only agreed to take part in the filming if he was given a royalty. That's like a small percentage of all the profits made from the Star Wars film. And it was a very good decision on his part, because I think it did make him very rich indeed. So even if you got 1% of all of the money that was made from the Star Wars films, I think that you'd be, you know, a millionaire many times over. So good move, Alec Guinness. We also had other people in there. The droids, you know, played by people. You had Kenny Baker, who was a little person who actually managed to fit inside the R2-D2 costume. So there's actually a person in there, which again is very important. It helps to give personality to the character of R2-D2, and sometimes you see the way he moves, you get the sense that this is not just a hunk of metal, but this is a character in there. I think that when you see in the prequel films, the episodes 1, 2, and 3, R2-D2 sometimes is basically computer graphics, and you don't get the same sense of personality or character or warmth from the droid as you do when it's just a bloke in a suit. Anthony Daniels played C-3PO, and he's the perfect person really for that role. He's slightly awkward, sort of the awkward English guy, slightly uptight. And it's interesting that R2-D2 and C-3PO seem to have a slightly difficult relationship. They bicker with each other and they argue and so on. Apparently the actors themselves also didn't really get on at all. They kind of hated each other too. I think in fact in the film, C-3PO and R2-D2 are much, much closer than the actors were in real life. Peter Mayhew as Chewbacca, this incredibly tall, very strong Wookiee with that sound, you know, the noise that he made, and all the other characters too. I mean, Harrison Ford was vital, I think, to the success of the film, because he provided that sexy kind of cool character. He's like the cowboy in space with his brilliant spaceship, the Millennium Falcon. A great counterpoint to Luke Skywalker, who is, you know, very sort of serious and earnest young man who wants to avenge the death of his uncle and aunt, and ends up on some sort of journey of self-discovery and all that kind of serious stuff. But Harrison Ford plays the sort of laid-back, cool guy who is very good with a blaster, and he's got all the kind of cool comebacks and things like that. So lots of boxes are ticked by this film. Some things are not dealt with, like there isn't sort of genuine romance in there. You don't get a sense of real human emotions and real human stories, but it's not meant to be a kind of realistic sort of everyday life kind of story. No, it's a huge sort of Greek myth set in space, really. And if you see it in that way, that's the key to enjoying Star Wars. It's an exciting adventure with mythical fantasy elements to it. So I first saw Star Wars probably when I was about 5 years old, I think. And I only vaguely remember it. I was with my family. We were on holiday somewhere. I think we were in Wales. We were like staying in a cottage in Wales on holiday, I think. And we watched it on a tiny little TV set. It was broadcast on TV, on the BBC, and we watched it, I think it was at Christmas, in fact, and we watched it on this tiny little TV set. It might even have been a black and white TV at that time, and I just remember vaguely some of that. I didn't really understand what was going on, and I think my brother James was sick as well at the time. He had like some kind of bad stomach, so he kept having to go to the toilet, and so you know, I don't really remember much about it, but what I do remember is that right at the end of the film, just before the final climax of the movie, the BBC broadcast was cut. There was something wrong, a technical problem, which meant that we lost the signal. So we missed the end of the film. So I never knew what happened at the end for years. But I did get immediately some kind of fascination with the Star Wars universe, and I was immediately gripped by it. And I think perhaps the second thing was when one day, complete surprise, I think my dad came home from work, and he, as a surprise, he'd bought two Star Wars toys for my brother and me, two Star Wars figures. And it was a big significant moment, because for some reason these Star Wars figures were just the greatest toys that we could have ever have been given. And my brother was given Obi-Wan Kenobi, and I remember distinctly that Obi-Wan Kenobi had a plastic... he had like a plastic cape and a lightsaber which came out of his arm. You could like push the lightsaber and it would come out of his arm, so you could make it go, you know. And I was given Luke Skywalker in his like X-Wing fighter uniform. And so immediately we were very attached to these toys, and we played with them all the time. And we were big fans of Star Wars. And I think that even after just seeing the film in black and white on a TV, James and me, it really caught our imaginations. And I remember us when we played games, we would often play Star Wars games with our Star Wars figures. Or we would play Star Wars role plays where I would always be Luke Skywalker, of course, because I'm Luke. So I was always Luke Skywalker, even in playground games at school. When other kids met me, as a child, when I met other children and I told them my name was Luke, then they would always say, "What, Luke Skywalker?" Kids have always called me Luke Skywalker all throughout my life. And even now as an adult, when I tell people my name's Luke, then, you know, there's always someone who goes, "Luke, Luke, I am your father," you know, or they say things like, "Use the Force, Luke." I get that kind of thing all the time. I'm now going to blow my nose again. In fact, I'm going to pause the recording this time in order to blow my nose. All right. Okay, I'm back, but my nose is still blocked up. It made no difference at all. I've got a cup of tea here as well, because I took the opportunity during the pausing of the podcast to make myself some tea. That is the magic of audio recording, that I can pause it. And it feels like just a second has gone by. In fact, it's been a bit longer than that, because I've gone downstairs and made myself a cup of tea. Yum, yum. Mm-mm. Ah, lovely. Very refreshing. So am I going to tell you the story of Star Wars, the plot? I think you probably know the plot, don't you? And in fact, no, I'm not going to go into too much detail there. I think you probably know Luke Skywalker. He discovers that Princess Leia has been captured by the Empire, and she sends a droid down onto his planet with, you know, hoping that someone will get the message that she implanted in the droid. Luke Skywalker, by coincidence, gets the message, and he suddenly seems to fall in love with this hologram of Princess Leia. He doesn't realise that he doesn't realise who she is, which is a bit of a shock later on. But he seems to kind of fall in love with her, and he goes to find Obi-Wan Kenobi, who is mentioned in the message. And Obi-Wan Kenobi is very mysterious, and he says, "Obi-Wan Kenobi, that's a name I haven't heard since." So he's kind of obviously knows things about what's going on, and the Empire are searching for the droids, and they ambush Luke Skywalker's home, and they kill his uncle and aunt, And but Luke survives and he decides, I'm going to learn how to become a Jedi. Obi-Wan Kenobi tells Luke that his father was killed by Darth Vader, and that his father was a Jedi Knight and all this stuff. And Luke's imagination is piqued by this. And so he decides he's going to follow Obi-Wan Kenobi to rescue the princess and learn to become a Jedi Knight. It really is the stuff of legend, isn't it? You know, rescuing a princess from a castle, learning to become a knight, all that kind of thing. It's like an old ancient story. And along the way, they are joined by Han Solo and Chewbacca. I said that I wouldn't explain the story, but that's exactly what I'm doing, so what the hell. I haven't really planned this episode. I've just decided to ramble because I don't have time to plan this episode. I could have sat down and written page after page of stuff, very carefully planned stuff about Star Wars, and I thought, no, I can't afford to spend the time on it. I'm just going to start recording and just spill my brains out into the microphone. So they meet up with Han Solo and Chewbacca, who agree to give them a lift basically to this planet where they hope to use the plans as a way of destroying the Death Star. They rescue the princess and they get to the rebel base, but the Empire have followed them, and then you end up with this climax where the rebels try to destroy the Death Star and the Death Star try to destroy the rebel base, and it's like it gets right down to the last second, and we know what happens, of course. Obi-Wan Kenobi has a fight with Darth Vader on the Death Star, and dramatic things happen. It's extremely exciting indeed. I think you probably know the rest of the story. I expect so. Huge success, of course. The second film, it went darker. We follow Luke Skywalker on his journey to discover the Force. We are introduced to Yoda for the first time. Yoda, of course, being this ancient Jedi master who trained Obi-Wan Kenobi. Yoda's first is introduced as like a very small, very weak character. But as we go on, we learn more about the Force, and we learn that Yoda is actually extremely powerful. He's got very bad grammar, very bad sentence structure, despite being one of the most powerful beings in the universe who can lift huge objects just with the power of his mind. He seems incapable of moving the verb into the center of the sentence, because I don't know why, but his grammar is bad. But he's you know, the awesome Jedi master, and he trains Luke in the ways of the Force. Luke goes to rescue his friends who've been kidnapped by Darth Vader, and he ends up battling with Vader. And it's a crucial moment in the story because Luke doesn't realize it, but Vader knows something about Luke Skywalker's family history. It turns out that what Obi-Wan Kenobi had told Luke about his father wasn't true, and we learn something incredible about the story. And in the end, in Return of the Jedi, Luke Skywalker learns, he completes his Jedi training, and he comes back to battle with Darth Vader again. And the Emperor, of course, is the leader of the Galactic Empire, and ultimately justice is done, and we end the last episode 6, we end that with Luke Skywalker having apparently defeated the Empire. The rebels with Luke Skywalker have defeated the Empire. The balance has been restored to the Force, and that's the end of the series. What happens in 7, 8 and 9 we are yet to discover, but we do know that Luke Skywalker, Han Solo and Princess Leia will return, and so we know that. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. Maybe there's a suggestion that one of the characters will turn to the dark side. It could be Luke Skywalker. It could be Princess Leia's children. I'm trying not to give away too many details of the story. If you haven't seen it, then I don't want to give away some of the big secrets in episodes 4, 5 and 6. I think if you have seen it, then you'll know what I'm talking about. So in terms of the Force, the Force is a very interesting concept. The idea that there's this kind of this force that binds the galaxy together, and that some people can have a lot of sensitivity to the Force, and they're able to use it to control people's minds. They can use it to manipulate the world around them. And yet, if you use the Force for evil things, if you use it for the wrong purposes, that it can corrupt you. And you can become seduced by the dark side of the Force, which may or may not be even more powerful than the light side. And so, you know, for example, we look at Darth Vader, who before, you know, at one point he was a good person, but he, for one reason or another, gets seduced by the dark side of the Force and ends up becoming an evil character. Not completely evil, but pretty blummin' evil, that's for sure. The Emperor is like the leader of the dark side, and then on the other, on the good side, you've got Yoda and Obi-Wan. So in episodes 4, 5, and 6, we see that the Rebellion and the Jedis, certainly, are not as strong as they used to be. And in fact, in the prequel trilogy, we see a world in which the Jedis are really the sort of like the judges or the leaders of they're like a group of sort of spiritual leaders or judges, I would say. And they're a lot more powerful. They have a lot more influence. Now, I absolutely love episodes 4, 5, and 6. And let me just sort of try and tell you why I like those episodes. I'm not so keen on the prequel trilogy, but 4, 5, and 6 for me are just fantastic. Why? Well, it's not because, you know, I don't judge Star Wars in the same way that I judge other films. And I can completely understand if you don't like Star Wars. Like, for example, my mum doesn't like it. It's just not her thing. And my girlfriend, she doesn't like it either. It doesn't grab her interest. My girlfriend's more interested in sort of realistic human dramas. You know, stories about real people in real situations with genuine emotions. And I love those films too. I really, really do. And yet, there's something about Star Wars. I think it's the connection to my childhood, because I had Star Wars on VHS cassette. We had Star Wars, we had, you know, Superman, we had Indiana Jones and a few other films. And I used to watch Star Wars again and again and again. It was always in the video player. And I would just, you know, watch a bit of it in the morning before school. I'd come home from school, watch a bit more, do some homework, eat my tea, watch a little bit more Star Wars. And when it got to the end, I'd just rewind it and start again. And so I've seen the film just hundreds of times. It must be hundreds of times. Obviously, I did other things. But for some reason, Star Wars was the film that I always went back to. And it just became more and more interesting the more I watched it. Fascinating, really. I think there's something about the idea that we enter the story in the middle. We don't enter it at the beginning. And so there are lots of things in certainly the original trilogy, 4, 5 and 6, there are lots of things which are not really explained. Like, for example, the backstory of who is Darth Vader, who is Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, what actually happened, who is the Emperor. Lots of mysteries and unexplained things. Lots of characters who appear in the series a little bit. It's like a whole world. Which has a lot more depth than what you actually see in the movies. So it really inspired my imagination and the imagination of my friends, and all the way up to, you know, as a teenager and as a student at university, I used to, you know, talk to my friends about Star Wars. And as I said, I'm a bit of a geek, but I'm not a complete geek. And I've got plenty of friends who are not really total geeks, but friends who love Star Wars. And it's just one of those subjects that you can sort of speculate about. We used to speculate about the backstories of the characters and about what really was going on behind the scenes and things like that. I think that was it, that it was this world that captured your imagination and allowed your creativity to run free. So also there were things like just the general design. The design of the spaceships, the design of the world in which the film is set. Now, it's not this kind of clean-cut, perfect sort of futuristic world that you get from Star Trek. In Star Trek, everything's nice and smooth and shiny and clean and everyone's perfect and it's like this kind of perfect version of society. No, Star Wars is dirty and it's gritty and things are broken and they don't really work. It's a much more sort of rough version of the universe. You know, like the Millennium Falcon has problems and Han Solo has to try and fix them, and things break down, and things are dirty, and like the clothing is a bit old, and you know, it's much more of a gritty, believable universe with real character and substance to it. It's not just the substance of the universe, but also the general production design. I like the way the ships look. I like the way the spaces look. I just love that aesthetic. Like the Millennium Falcon, it just, the design of it for me is just great. It's not symmetrical. The surface is all rough. And there's all sorts of bits and pieces on it. It's just a cool shape. The same thing with all of the ships, all of the stuff in Star Wars. I just love the way it all looks. In fact, I think in episodes 4, 5, and 6, pretty much every design, every aspect of design appeals to me. To a lesser extent in the prequel films, although they look pretty good too. There are some things that I don't like, but 4, 5 and 6, I think most of it visually really appeals to me. And it's not just the visual stuff as well, it's also the sound effects, the sound design of Star Wars is great. I mean, there are some really fantastic sound effects. I've actually got a soundboard here on StarWars.com, and we've got some sound effects like a stormtrooper blaster, like that. That's just an iconic sound. Princess Leia's blaster sounds like this. What a great sound. We've also got Han Solo's blaster. Whoa. They just sound really cool, don't you think? So there are other sounds as well that we have in here. I'm going to play around with this soundboard a little bit. We've got, okay, lots of sound effects here. Battle droids, the Battle of Hoth. Okay, so we've not only here on this soundboard do we have sound effects of the blasters and things, but we also have some quotes.
Watch that crossfire, boys!
That's Luke Skywalker. Just
right now, I feel like I could take on the whole empire myself.
Echo Station 3TA.
We have spotted Imperial walkers.
You know all these noises and sounds? This is all from The Empire Strikes Back. You know those sound effects? Just really chunky, meaty sounds. It all sounds really, really great.
Let her go! Detach cable! Cable detached!
Okay, so if you've seen the films, like, you know, as many times as me, then those sounds just bring it all back. Let's go to the Battle of Yavin. This is the original assault on the Death Star. No, that's just all... I'm not so keen on the spoken samples. I just like the noises. We've heard some blasters. Let's see what else we got here. Ewoks, Jabba's Palace, Imperial Officers, Jawas, lightsabers. Come on. Let's have a little bit of lightsaber action. Ooh. That's the sound of a lightsaber turning on. I think that's Luke Skywalker's green lightsaber from Return of the Jedi. That's Darth Vader's lightsaber, isn't it? Okay. And this is a lightsaber turning off. Okay. Oh, yeah. That iconic noise that we all made as children when we were pretending to be a Jedi. Woom, 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 woom. And there's also the sounds of when lightsabers hit each other. Yeah. I mean, wow, that's a great sound. Oh my god. I just love these sounds. All right. So it's the sound design as well as the visual design. It's the whole universe. I mean, let's have a little bit of Okay, that's the Millennium Falcon. Okay. All right. Oh, no, it's music. Okay. So the sound design, the visual design, all of it for me was just really appealing and just very special. And how did they make some of those noises? Some of these sounds are just really, really distinctive. And how did they make them? Well, if we actually hear, do we have any sounds of, we have any sounds of Chewbacca or X-Wings? Okay, if we have some TIE fighters sound like this. So, brilliant noises, aren't they? Aren't they amazing sound effects? Apparently, a lot of these sound effects were actually made by combining different animal noises. You get sort of a noise of a lion or a tiger screaming with the sound of a seal barking and things like that. And so, strangely sort of organic sounds for these machines. Creatures, do we have any others here? Okay, I think that's enough of the sound effects. So also there's the sort of family relationship aspect of it too, like the dark relationship between Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader, which has sort of possibly has some Oedipal kind of things going on. And if you're a young guy, you know, a teenager or younger than that, that there's something that kind of rings true. There's something that is significant about the sort of realizations that you go through as a young lad growing up. There are certain things that as you, for example, go through adolescence, maybe there are some subtexts or psychological subtexts which related to the difficult relationship that you might have with your father or with other aspects of your family life. And maybe those aren't necessarily overtly dealt with in the film, but there is a subtext there which maybe feeds into part of the obsession that some people have with the film. So I think that's probably it for my reasons for loving it so much. And also it's just a great adventure. It's just so exciting. The fact that I've seen it so many times, it's a thing that I can use to bond with my friends. So when I'm together with my friends, sometimes we quote lines from the films. We like to kind of repeat parts of the movie to each other and talk about it. I mean, it's if you've seen the film as many times as I have, if you kind of if it was part of your childhood, like it was mine, then you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you don't really get it, then there might not be anything I can do really to convince you. So I suppose to an extent, I'm probably preaching to the converted here.
Did you hear that?
I did hear that, yes.
We're doomed.
That's C-3PO there speaking. I want to hear R2-D2. Because he's just brilliant.
Ichuta.
That's not R2-D2.
You're a feisty little one, but you'll soon learn some respect.
Now, the original films, as I've said, were just great. Now, the prequels, what happened? Well, after episodes 4, 5 and 6 were released, that's Star Wars A New Hope, Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back, which is the darker film, and then Star Wars The Return of the Jedi, which is a slightly more family-friendly film. Most people consider it to be the worst of that three. I still like it a lot. I think there are still some great moments in there, like Boba Fett appears in it and some other things, Jabba the Hutt and stuff like that. After the huge success of those three films, nothing really happened. We had no Star Wars related stuff at all for years, until I think it was around 1997 when the technology had advanced to the point where George Lucas was able to release the special edition versions of the Star Wars trilogy. And I don't really like them, I'll be honest. I'm now going to drink some tea. So the special editions, which are now the ones that you see everywhere. If you get like a Star Wars movie on DVD or something like that, it's probably going to be the special edition. It's pretty hard to find the original theatrical versions of the Star Wars films. So the special editions was, for me, I mean, it obviously made Lucasfilm and George Lucas loads of money, because everyone went out to the cinemas again and they saw them again, and everyone bought the DVDs again and all that stuff. But really, the special editions are not better than the originals. In fact, I think they're worse. So, in terms of Star Wars Episode 4, George Lucas added in some extra scenes, and on top of some of the original footage, he added special effects like computer-generated images, CGI. So you see, for example, when Luke's, when stormtroopers are in the desert, it's not just two stormtroopers. There are also other stormtroopers riding tauntauns in the background. Banthas, in fact, not tauntauns. I'm going to get my animal facts correct. And also he added in some other scenes, like a scene in which you see Han Solo talking to Jabba the Hutt. Now, you'll know from Return of the Jedi that Jabba the Hutt is this huge, horrible monster, and he's a gangster who basically rules large parts of the galaxy. He's an organized criminal, huge, slimy monster, basically. In the original Star Wars film, Jabba the Hutt was in the script, but he wasn't a monster, he was just a man. And he was, you know, a gangster, but just a man. And there was a scene in the original script for Star Wars that they filmed, and it was Han Solo talking to Jabba the Hutt, saying, "Okay, Jabba, don't worry, I'm going to give you your money, just give me a few more days," that kind of thing. And in that scene, you see Han Solo talking to a man, and they walk around each other, and the camera moves around them. And George Lucas, in his infinite wisdom, and that's sarcasm, of course, George Lucas decided that he would replace the actor who played Jabba the Hutt with a CGI version of Jabba the Hutt, the one that we know from the Return of the Jedi film. But it just doesn't work. It's a complete disaster. It's awful. It's horrible, in fact, because the Jabba the Hutt is too small, and it looks like a cartoon, and Han Solo has to walk around him. Because he walks around him, he has to walk over his tail, and so Han Solo is digitally moved up, so he steps over Jabba the Hutt's tail. The whole thing is just a total ridiculous joke, and it's horrible to see. And it just stands out like a what's the expression? It stands out like a sore thumb. Something stands out like a sore thumb. It means it's really obvious and it doesn't fit in. So this moment with Jabba the Hutt stands out like a sore thumb, and that's not the only thing. There are other things too, like other CGI monsters which have been added in place, and the scene in the cantina bar, they added more computer graphics. And maybe the worst bit, the one that everyone talks about, is the moment where we first meet Han Solo, and he's talking to a bounty hunter called Greedo, and Greedo is wants to catch Han Solo because there's a bounty on his head. That means that Jabba the Hutt will pay anyone money if they get Han Solo to him, because he owes Jabba the Hutt money. And there's this sort of Western cowboy style standoff with the two of them sitting. I say it's a standoff; they're actually sitting down opposite each other. And Han Solo's acting very, very cool, and Greedo's pointing a gun at him, and he's saying, "Look, I'm going to take you to Jabba the Hutt. There's nothing you can do about it." And Han Solo's being all cool, and he shoots him from under the table. Greedo doesn't realise that Han Solo's actually picked his gun up, and he shoots him under the table. And it works, because Han Solo's a scoundrel. He's not afraid of, you know, doing slightly bad things to protect himself. That's the character of Han Solo. He's a selfish scoundrel. He's a bit ruthless. And so, yeah, he shoots Greedo first without Greedo realizing it, because he's looking after himself. And we like Han Solo. We like him more because of that. We think, this guy is dangerous. He's ruthless. He's a scoundrel, but he's cool and he's charming and he's handsome. And we need a character like this in the film. In the special edition versions, George Lucas decided that he would manipulate the original footage, and he would make Greedo shoot first, and Han Solo sort of dodges the laser blast, and then he shoots Greedo. Completely unnecessary. It looks fake, it looks rubbish, and it somehow diminishes the impact of Han Solo as a character. So there are more and more examples of this in the other films, where George Lucas is basically messing around with the original films, and he doesn't improve them, he makes them worse. Except in some cases he cleared up some of the special effects to make them look better. He added in a few extra like scenes of the spaceships, you know, made of CGI, and they look really good, but some of the scenes unnecessary. And unfortunately it was a sign of what was going to come with the prequel movies. So we found out sometime in the late 90s that George Lucas was making episodes 1, 2 and 3, And the first one was released in 1999 with lots of hype, lots of media hype around it. Naturally, I was very excited too, and I went to the cinema with my friends to see the film, and I have to say it was a big disappointment. It was pretty horrible, really. Too many special effects. The script was terrible. All sorts of things were wrong with it. And really, to get the full explanation of what exactly is wrong with the prequel trilogy, I highly recommend that you watch a series of videos by an online YouTube channel called Red Letter Media. You must watch the Red Letter Media Star Wars Episode 1 review. And I think it's called Mr. Plinkett Reviews Star Wars The Phantom Menace. And he also does another one for the second film and the third film. What, in a nutshell, was wrong with those films? Well, first of all, we already knew what was going to happen at the end. So what the films basically dealt with it was like an origin story of Darth Vader, essentially. So we see young Anakin Skywalker, and we follow him up through his adolescence and into his adulthood, and we see him training as a Jedi, and then ultimately we see how he turns to the dark side of the Force. But we know exactly what's going to happen at the end. We know that the final scene of the last movie is going to be him as Darth Vader going. So we know what's going to happen. There's not really a sense of surprise or mystery. That's one of the problems. Another problem is too much CGI. Too many graphics. Okay, lots of characters were made of CGI. The actors, when they were making the film, they had to perform against a green screen. That's where there is no actual physical set. They're just on a studio, in a studio with a green screen behind them, and they're having to pretend, like imagine that they're fighting a monster, or imagine that they're walking through a cave, or whatever, and that afterwards they would add all the special effects at the end. And the result is that it just feels fake. It feels unreal. You don't get the sense that the characters are interacting with the world around them, that it feels like a cartoon. It's lots and lots of bad decisions. Lots of bad decisions. Also, there was a character called Jar Jar Binks, who is universally hated. This kind of character who's supposed to appeal to young kids. And he's this floppy sort of character, this ridiculous character who is also a sort of racial... It's also a kind of racial stereotype. He speaks in this kind of Jamaican dialect. It's just offensive in that way, but it's also just a horribly annoying character. There's nothing really enjoyable about Jar Jar Binks, and he just irritates you. And there are lots and lots of other problems. I mean, some of the prequels contain some good moments, like you had an epic lightsaber duel between Obi-Wan Kenobi, Qui-Gon Jinn, played by Liam Neeson from the Taken movies, what's his name? Darth Maul, what's he called? The Sith Lord with the red face and the horns and that double lightsaber. That fight between them is brilliant. I mean, it's really dramatic, and Darth Maul is a great character. And also the pod race is pretty cool. Some amazing sound effects and dramatic moments. And some of the space battles are pretty good too. But all in all, too much, okay? Too much CGI, not enough proper character development, lots of stupid ideas in the plot that don't make any sense, complicated politics, like loads and loads of trade negotiations and politics that didn't make any sense. I mean, I still don't really understand it, to be honest. Loads of details that I don't really understand. And also Yoda fighting with a lightsaber. I mean, come on. It was really awful. Yoda fights against the Emperor. And it just becomes like some kind of children's cartoon. There's nothing realistic about it. They're just jumping around, you know, flipping through the air. Yoda's like jumping up and down and flipping around. I completely lost interest. And for me, there was no drama. It just became tiresome and boring and unengaging. And the final battle between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker, the moment really where Anakin becomes Darth Vader. Again, it's just a very overextended, too long. The fight is too long. They're just jumping from thing to thing to thing. And in the end, the drama is lost. And I think really what happened is that George Lucas had too much creative control. He was surrounded by people who were just saying yes to everything. So it was like, okay, I think I'm going to do this. And everyone's like, okay, George, I think that's a really great idea, George. So in the original film, everything was against him when he made the first one. It was a project which he thought was going to be a failure. And he had to work really hard to try and make it good. In the with the prequel trilogy, everyone was agreeing. He had too much money available to him, and they got overambitious. And the end result was, you know, a sort of unimpressive bit of a mess, really. With some good things, the space battle between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Boba Fett in Attack of the Clones, that's a brilliant moment where Boba Fett is firing out these weird sort of bombs into space, and they go like that, and all the meteors explode, and Obi-Wan Kenobi has to avoid them all. That's a really great, exciting moment. But all in all, I wasn't impressed, as you can tell, by the prequel trilogy. But that brings us now on to episodes 7, 8, and 9. And now, we don't know what's going to happen. That's one of the cool things. We don't know what's going to happen, first of all. Another thing that I think is a good sign is that George Lucas isn't directing them. So Lucasfilm, that's the company that George Lucas owned, which produced the Star Wars films. Lucasfilm was sold to Disney. So, and you know, at that point, everyone was a bit worried. Oh my God, what's going to happen? Is it going to become like Mickey Mouse in space? Well, no. Disney, thankfully, I think these days they're pretty smart and they know what they're doing. And J.J. Abrams was brought on as the director, which I think was probably the best choice they could have made. I can't really think of anyone else who could have done a better job than him. He seems to be the ideal candidate. He's a huge Star Wars fan. He is also responsible for revitalizing the Star Trek movies. You know, in the last few years, he came up with Star Trek and then another Star Trek film, and they're great. I mean, personally, I think they're really, really good. Really sort of funny and edgy and dramatic and exciting and original and all really good things. And in fact, for me, the newer Star Trek films, they look a bit, it looks a bit like the Star Wars universe. It's kind of a bit cocky, a bit grubby, a bit messy. It for me, it reminds me of Star Wars. So I think that Abrams is going to do a good job. I hope so. Fingers crossed. And I think that J.J. Abrams has had a good proper look at what was right about the original Star Wars films and what was wrong about the prequels. And I think he's trying to stay true to the originals. So that means I've read that he's decided to try to put less CGI in the films and more like more physical special effects, like genuine models and animatronics and things like that, because it creates that more realistic feel. So we will see. We'll see what happens. But going back to the teaser trailer, it looks pretty good to me, and it reminds me of the original films. It doesn't look like we've got a million things happening on the screen all at the same time, and yet nothing that we really care about. It looks pretty good for me. And, well, I hope that you're a Star Wars fan, because the next 12 months could be quite exciting. But I suppose what I should do is try not to get caught up in all the hype. I should just try and keep it an arm's length and wait for the films to be released in December 2015 and then actually judge it without any prejudice at all. That's probably the best way. I find that when I get excited about a film and I watch the trailers and I watch all the interviews and all the stuff on the internet, and then when I finally see the film, usually I'm disappointed. But if I don't read anything about it and I just go into the cinema completely fresh, that usually is the best move, because I get surprised by things. I went to see Prometheus, you know, the Alien prequel, Ridley Scott. When Prometheus came out, I got really excited and I watched all the teaser trailers and stuff on YouTube, and I got really excited about it. I went to see it and I was disappointed. I'd love to do an. I will do an episode about Prometheus at some point, because it's just it's like terrible and brilliant at the same time. So what I should do is avoid the publicity for Star Wars and just go and see it. But it's going to be very difficult, because you know how much I care about Star Wars. It's going to be very hard for me not to consume all of the hype and publicity and stuff. We will just have to wait and see what happens. What was that? That was like some kind of noise. I'm just trying to find some R2-D2 sound effects. See if we got any more good sound effects here. Creatures, Ewoks, Jabba's Palace, lightsabers, the Millennium Falcon. I've done a bit of that. Pod racers, yeah. Okay, the Force. The Force is strong.
The Force is strong with this one.
Yeah.
Use the Force, Luke.
I will use the Force, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Thanks. I should have that as my ringtone, don't you think?
Use the Force, Luke.
The Force will be with you. Always.
Oh, thanks.
Yes. Jedi's strength flows from the Force.
Okay, grammar was pretty good there, Yoda. Not bad.
Yes. Jedi's strength flows from the Force.
All right. Whoa, that was loud. All right. Okay. Uh-huh.
The Force is what gives the Jedi his power. It's an energy field created by all living things. It surrounds us and penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together.
All right. The Force is what gives the Jedi his power. That's Obi-Wan Kenobi speaking there. What else have we got?
How long have you had these droids?
How long have you...
Three or four seasons?
They're up for sale if you want them.
Let me see your identification.
You don't need to see his identification.
We don't need to see his identification.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for.
He can go about his business.
You can go about your business.
Move along.
Move along. Move along.
Right, that's an example of when Obi-Wan Kenobi uses the Jedi mind trick. Two stormtroopers have... They're questioning Luke Skywalker about his droids, and Obi-Wan Kenobi says, "You don't need to see his identification." And they're like, "We don't need to see his identification." And then he uses a phrasal verb. Of course he does. Move along, move along. Meaning, you can go ahead now and go away, I suppose.
Force is strong in my family. My father has it. I have it. And my sister.
Okay.
Vader was seduced by the dark side of the Force.
All right, I think that brings us to the end of this particular Star Wars themed episode. Now, what I would like to do is do more stuff on Star Wars. That's right. And I want to... Actually, I would like to... Wait a minute. Oh, I've got some C-3PO sounds, have I? Where's R2-D2? Where is R2-D2 in this sound effect thing? Never mind. Anyway, what I would like to do is actually record a commentary track, like a DVD commentary track for Star Wars Episode 4. So I plan to do that at some point. I was going to do that today. I don't have time. But at some point soon, I hope, I will sit down and I'll put Star Wars Episode 4 on. I've got it lined up here. This is it. I could just give you maybe the... This is the beginning. 20th Century Fox. Very familiar opening. I've seen this so many times. And it says, a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And then the iconic opening. Here we go. So there's the yellow Star Wars sign disappearing into space as the opening credits begin. And here we have the yellow letters scrolling away from us into space, announcing the beginning of the film, Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. And we've got the little sort of background story. It's a period of civil war. Rebel spaceships striking from a hidden base have won their first victory against the evil Galactic Empire. During the battle, rebel spies managed to steal secret plans to the Empire's ultimate weapon, the Death Star, an armoured space station with enough power to destroy an entire planet. Pursued by the Emperor's sinister agents, Princess Leia races home aboard her starship, custodian of the stolen plans that can save her people and restore freedom to the galaxy. That's how the movie begins, and it just shows that it's just like some epic adventure, space adventure. The other thing I hadn't mentioned was the music. Composed by John Williams, who is maybe one of like Hollywood's greatest music composers, maybe with Bernard Herrmann and some other people. But the music really is very, very important in Star Wars. It provides so much of the drama and the emotion. So here we see the we see Princess Leia's spaceship being pursued by the Imperial Star Destroyer, which currently is flying over the top of the camera. This incredible long shot, this huge spaceship, which gives us an idea of the imposing nature of the Empire. And it's interesting that the idea of the Empire, it could be sort of symbolic of two things. If there's a subtext about the Empire, well, I mean, obviously it's just the classic kind of evil authoritarian government. But maybe it's sort of like, for the Americans, maybe the Empire is like the sort of British Empire that they had to fight against back in the early days of American independence. Which is interesting because all of the actors who play sort of high-ranking members of the Empire, they're all British actors. They're all like these classical British actors with these cut-glass, received pronunciation accents. Peter Cushing, of course, plays Grand Moff Tarkin, who is like the head of the Death Star. And he's got this amazing sort of old-school British accent, as do all of the other high-ranking members of the Empire. So maybe there's a subtext of like the British Empire versus the, you know, the American Revolution. Or even it could also be the idea of the American administration. And bear in mind that this film was made sort of, you know, just after the Vietnam War ended. And so this idea of the battle of this this small rebellion against like a large, corrupt, evil administration. Maybe there's something in the sort of hippie thing, the war in Vietnam. Maybe the American government of the Empire. Or maybe it's just a universal story of a struggle against an evil power. So I'm actually giving the commentary to this now, but I'm not going to continue. But eventually I will come back to this and I'll record my commentary track to Star Wars. And then you'll be able to listen to the commentary while you're actually watching the film. And that could be a really great way to enjoy Star Wars and for me to sort of ramble on about the film even more, getting into more specific details about particular scenes like this one where Darth Vader makes his first appearance. He's just stepped onto Princess Leia's spaceship. And here's a bit of R2-D2. Okay. R2-D2, where are you? I just love it. I'm sorry. I love it. I hope that you do too. That's the end of this episode. Hopefully soon I'll do my commentary track for Star Wars Episode 4. I'd like my brother to join me on that one, if he's available. But for now, for this episode, it's time for me to say goodbye. I hope that you're getting excited about Star Wars, just like I am, and that you're looking forward to the new films. Let me know your thoughts. As ever, please leave your comments at teacherluke.co.uk. Leave your thoughts and your comments. Tell me what you think about Star Wars. What did you think of the original films? What did you think of the prequel trilogy? How do you feel about the new ones? If you don't like Star Wars, that's fine, and I would really like to hear your reasons. I'd like to read your reviews of all of the films, positive or negative. Just please join the debate and get in touch. But for now, it's time for me to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye.
We're on a diplomatic mission.
If this is a consular ship, where is the ambassador? Commander, tear this ship apart until you found those plans and bring me the passengers. I want them alive.
set for stun. She'll be all right. Inform Lord Vader we have a prisoner.
Hey, you're not permitted in there. It's restricted. You'll be deactivated for sure. Don't you call me a mindless philosopher, you overweight glob of grease. Now come on before somebody sees you. Secret mission? What plans? What are you talking about? I'm not getting in there. I'm going to regret this.
There goes another one.
Hold your fire. There's no life forms. You must have short-circuited.
That's funny. The damage doesn't look as bad from out here. Are you sure this thing is safe?
Thanks again for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.